But instead, right now, for a community conversation, you're joined in the studio by Fireman Kenny. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Rick. KMG 365, Fireman Kenny is on the air, helping you to stay safe in a world where danger never takes a vacation. And as always, following my regular format, I've got my monthly shout-outs. So my first shout-out is to Jonathan Sinovic of Source One Project Solutions and his Step Beyond Green to Healthy initiative. Jonathan partners with Dave Calley of Dimension Inc. and John Atley of Water Doctors to have a booth at the Metropolitan Builders Association Home Building and Remodeling Show at the State Fair Park every January. The initiative helps promote healthy building practices, as well as gives an area for the Wisconsin Fire Sprinkler Coalition to promote the installation of residential fire sprinklers to people who may be thinking about building a new home. For those who don't know, the Wisconsin Fire Sprinkler Coalition is made up of the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin Charitable Foundation, Wisconsin State Fire Chiefs Association, Wisconsin State Fire Inspectors Association, Wisconsin State Firefighters Association, and the National Fire Sprinkler Association. Thanks also go to Mike Wass, Marty King, Mike Gunderson, Ed Ruckriegel, and Bill Sullivan for their assistance with promoting home fire sprinklers at the show. For more information on the Step Beyond Green to Healthy initiative, go to www.stepbeyondgreentohealthy.com or like the Step Beyond Healthy to Green Facebook page. To one of my best friends in the whole wide world, Brad Dahl, on his retirement from the Milwaukee Police Department. Brad retires as a sergeant after a 25-year career with the MPD. Brad is an active, longtime member of the Butler Volunteer Fire Department, where he and I started as explorers and we're partners at EMT school. So congratulations to Brad on his retirement.
That's a long, long time.
That is a long time. 25 years on the Milwaukee Police Department is a long time. So Brad, it aged him. So a while back, he's got two daughters and a son, and his oldest daughter. Brad was, he was already turning gray in high school, and he asked his daughter one time, Isabel, what color is my hair? And she goes, gray. And he goes, no, the other color, because there were still a few specks of black. And she goes, white. So, Milwaukee Police Department kind of aged him a little bit. So, long time coming, but congratulations to him on his retirement. And then also, Mike Wass gets another shout out. So, to Mike Wass and those people who help promote with the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin Charitable Foundation. First annual Burn Gala in Madison on Saturday, February 1st. The PFFW Foundation held the Burn Gala at the Concourse Hotel in an effort to raise funds for the new burn unit at the University of Wisconsin Hospital in Madison. Both Mike and I have seats on the UW Hospital Burn Board, and a thank you to all of the sponsors as well. Most of the money raised will help fund the new burn unit, which will expand from 7 to 11 beds, as well as have larger burn treatment areas, as well as greater amenities for the family members. So if there's anybody out there that wants to donate to the UW Hospital burn unit on its expansion, you can either get a hold of me in the office or you can contact the UW Hospital to give to that foundation.
I talked to the doctor who was the head of that burn unit once a couple years ago.
Yeah, Dr. Angela Gibson. She's a friend of the show. Dr. Gibson was there. She gave a great speech on Saturday night. So Sandy and I attended the gala, and it was a great thing. And the amount of thought, and it's stuff you never think about. We had a tour of the new burn unit, and just little things like, let's say, where they're doing the hydro treatments with the water and doing the cleaning of the patient, and they're on the bed, and they made the rooms where the either a doctor or a nurse can be at the head of the bed while the bed is tilted enough that the water can drain down and the drain is at the right at the foot of the bed. So little things like that that you would never think of that somebody working with that says, oh, I wish that we could do this, and they made it happen.
There we go. All right.
So moving on to monthly sprinkler saves, or also known as fires you never hear about, because there's no news in something that was stopped from happening. And as I pointed out, I'm an advocate of fire sprinkler systems and a dues-paying member of the National Fire Sprinkler Association, www.nfsa.org. Be sure to follow the National Fire Sprinkler Association on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Visit sprinklersaves.com to see the latest information on activated sprinklers that suppressed or controlled fires. And for our listeners who are fire department members, please remember to go to sprinklersaves.com and report any sprinkler saves you have in your fire response area. So we only have one from Wisconsin this past month, so I picked a couple other occupancy types again, just showing that fires can happen anywhere, and they do, and that anything can happen that suppressing the fires keeps these companies in business. So our only one from Wisconsin, on January 13th, the Appleton Fire Department says a kitchen fire in an apartment building was stopped by the apartment's fire sprinkler system. The fire department was alerted to the fire on the 400 block of North Richmond Street at 6 o'clock Monday morning by a water flow alarm from the sprinkler system. The fire started in a combination vent hood and microwave oven in the kitchen of a vacant apartment. The apartment was being cleaned. The oven was put on a self-cleaning cycle and the fan in the vent hood was left running. The fire department says the sprinkler system contained the fire until firefighters arrived and kept conditions survivable for other tenants to escape. The sprinkler system in this building operated as designed, keeping this incident from being a major disaster, a statement from the fire department reads. Fire and smoke damage was mostly limited to the apartment, but there was water damage to three other apartments. Damage is estimated at $60,000. So in this case, an apartment building that was being cleaned, it wasn't even being occupied, the fire started in there, and people were not injured or killed because the sprinkler system kept it in check.
Well, that self-cleaning cycle on the oven, that oven gets hot.
Oh, yeah. That's very hot.
It's hot.
Yeah, it's very hot. So luckily that this was prevented from happening, that the people are able to still live in their apartments, and the apartment owner isn't out rent revenue for that month.
Right.
From Pennsylvania, a quarry man was charged with setting fire to a Summit Township motel bed and damaging the motel room's sprinkler system. Patrick Hanlon Jr., 30, was staying at the Microtel Inn, 8100 Peach Street, on Tuesday, January 21st, when he set fire to his bed, state police said in a news release. Hanlon then left the room without notifying authorities about the fire. The room's fire suppression system extinguished the fire, but state police discovered that one sprinkler head had been broken before it was activated. The fire caused about $15,000 in damage, state police said. Troopers also found drug paraphernalia in the room. Hanlon was arrested in the motel lobby and later charged with causing or risking a catastrophe, criminal mischief, arson, reckless endangerment, and possession of a controlled substance paraphernalia. Hanlon was taken to the Erie County Prison on $50,000 monetary bail. So here we go with someone. You could be staying in this hotel and somebody else is doing something that they shouldn't be doing and causing you danger. And the sprinkler system helped save any other visitors to that hotel.
Sure.
And from California, a cooking fire at an Oceanside senior community displaced 8 to 10 residents on Saturday, January 25th. The fire broke out at the three-story Little Jackson Senior Center on Lake Boulevard around 7:20 p.m. A cooking fire in a unit on the second floor triggered the sprinkler system and put out the flames before they spread. Crews shut off the sprinklers when they arrived. The Red Cross was called to help the 8 to 10 residents who were displaced by the fire damage. One resident was evaluated by paramedics but didn't need to go to the hospital, officials said. So again, this could be anybody's parents or grandparents that are in one of these senior living facilities.
Sure.
A fire starts somewhere in the building, but all the people are safe. So again, kudos to the fire sprinkler systems for doing the job properly.
All right.
So moving on to National Burn Awareness Week, which is this week, February 2nd to the 8th, sponsored by the American Burn Association, of which I am a card-carrying member. I'm also attending the ABA 52nd annual meeting in Orlando next month, as part of my position as IFF 5th District Burn Coordinator. For more information on the American Burn Association or to join, great organization, and it's not that expensive to join it, you can go to AmeriBurn.org. So according to the American Burn Association, each year over 450,000 individuals are seen in emergency departments, clinics, or physician offices for the treatment of burn injury in the United States and Canada. In 2014 alone, there were 3,275 recorded deaths from fire and smoke inhalation injuries. The majority of these injuries are preventable. The American Burn Association strives to bring awareness to the causes of such devastating and costly injuries and encourages everyone to make simple environmental and behavioral changes that can save lives. So the 2020 theme for the National Burn Awareness Week is contact burns, hot surfaces, damaged skin. So contact burns are thermal burns where the person has come into direct contact with hot objects. Examples include burns from contact with a hot stove or pan, as well as burns from contact with portable heating appliances. So we have some facts about contact burns. So roughly about 70,000 people went to the hospital emergency department because of contact burns in 2018. About one third of the patients were children under the age of five.
Sure.
Yeah, that's, and again, children don't know. And we've talked about this a number of times. And again, pre-hospital, our paramedics really don't see a lot of these burns. A lot of these burns are taken care of in the home. And then the parents take the burn children right to a clinic or the hospital. We don't get to see these burns. So a lot of this, trying to do the outreach, we don't have a lot of statistics pre-hospital for these types of burns, especially with children. So children under five face a higher risk of non-fire cooking burns. These young children account for 6% of the population, but much larger percentages of non-burn fire injuries from cooking equipment, tableware such as bowls and soups, and cookware such as pots and pans. In contrast to the non-fire burn estimate, reported home structure fires caused by cooking kill 530 people and injured 5,270 people. This was a fraction of total burn injuries caused by cooking, hot foods, and hot drinks. Children under five accounted for only 6% of home cooking fire deaths and 3% of home cooking fire injuries. Cooking was still the leading cause of home fire injuries in the under five age group.
And again, that's, you know, because kids that age can, well, they kind of move like lightning.
Yeah, they do. They move very fast. They're very curious.
And if you don't, if you've got, you know, got that cup of hot coffee sitting on the edge of the counter, you've got the handles turned out on the pans on the stove, those are all things that are just basically targets.
Exactly. Children just want to reach, they want to pull, and they're curious about their environment around them. And any chance they have to grab something, they're going to take it. But all those things that they're grabbing at can cause them harm and injury. All right, so here's some contact burn safety tips. Supervise children around hot objects at all times. Stand at least 3 feet away from hot outdoor objects. Clear area, keep area clear of the trip hazards. Limit alcohol consumption. So again, hold my beer, watch this.
Yep.
You know, so anytime you've got children around, limit your alcohol consumption when it comes to hot objects. Protect your feet from hot objects by wearing shoes when walking on hot pavement or sand. Keep pets off hot pavement too. So this one was actually kind of a surprise for me. So I think I've talked about this before. Last year when I was at the American Burn Association annual meeting, they have an annual poster contest. And two of the top three winning posters had to do with shoes. And again, we don't see pre-hospital. Our paramedics don't see these kind of burn injuries. They go to the hospital or go to a clinic. And I asked one of the burn nurses, I said, is this that big of a problem? And they said, you have no idea how big of a problem it is. Hmm. So make sure you're wearing shoes on hot pavement. Make sure you're wearing shoes on hot sand. It is a big issue.
And again, if it's too hot for you to walk across, it's too hot for your pet to walk across.
Exactly. Yep. So
get that out there.
Yeah. Keep your dogs off the pavement. Because remember, they're not wearing shoes. You are. So,
right.
Yeah. Make sure you're not, you know, walking them on the grass and making sure that, they are, away from any hot pavement. So the grass is the best because it's not going to absorb the heat as much.
Right.
So keep them on the grass and keep them off the hot pavement. Turn heating pads and blankets off before sleep. Have hot pads available whenever cooking. Long oven mitts are best when needing to reach in or over hot surfaces, such as in an oven or over a grill. Assume all pots and pans are hot. Remember to treat items coming from the microwave as you would items from the oven. Limit microwave use by children. Unplug tools such as these when not in use and always treat as if they are still hot. Keep out of reach of children. Ranges or ovens were the most common cooking equipment involved in non-fire cooking burns. Only 14% of thermal burns involving ranges or ovens were due to fire or flame. Although tableware is not itself used for cooking, it often holds very hot food, soups, or drinks, and may itself be very hot. frostbite and hypothermia. So we're coming out of the winter. So we'll just remember these for next year. Because it's been a nice winter, actually. We've been pretty lucky this year.
Yeah, I don't know. We may have to deal with another round of cold here, I think. Frostbite and hypothermia. Probably still a timely topic.
Yeah. Well, because the November weather we had was pretty bad.
Yeah.
And then December, January wasn't that bad. February's been nice so far. But frostbite and hypothermia, most people don't think of frostbite as a burn, but it's actually a reverse thermal burn caused by cold temperature. So what is frostbite and hypothermia? Well, frostbite is freezing of exposed body parts such as the fingers, toes, nose, or earlobes. The affected area is cold to the touch, may appear cherry red, mottled, very pale, or even white. The skin may have a feeling of numbness, pins and needles, or is very painful, especially when rewarming. Hypothermia occurs when the body temperature cools to a life-threatening level and sometimes accompanies frostbite injury. So frostbite and hypothermia facts. So hypothermia is a true medical emergency. In the U.S., an average of 1,300 deaths per year are associated with cold exposure. 67% of hypothermia-related deaths were men. So guys out there, be a little more careful. Alcohol and drug use increases the chance of suffering a frostbite injury and or hypothermia. So again, limit your alcohol, especially when you're going outside. Those who suffer from diabetes, heart conditions, as well as infants and the elderly are at greater risk of sustaining hypothermia in cold weather. Signs of hypothermia include slurred speech, shivering, weakness, confusion, drowsiness, and or loss of consciousness. So tips for prevention, pay attention to weather forecasts. So remember, my mom dresses me funny because of John Milan. So make sure you're paying attention to the weather forecasts. Dress in several layers of loose, warm clothing. Wear hats that fully cover the ears, warm boots, and mittens. Remember, you lose a lot of your heat out of the top of your head, so always have a hat at least available to you.
Back when I was in college, there was a guy who was running for state school superintendent. He didn't win, but he came to talk to our class about his campaign. And he was wearing a stocking cap in September. And he said, it's because you lose so much of your heat through the top of your head. And he said, I wear one year round.
Yeah, and so especially with people who don't have a full head of hair, that might be more important than making sure they have the hat on to keep that heat in.
Yep.
Drink plenty of warm fluids, but avoid alcohol and caffeine. So again, the caffeine thing, I need to limit mine, but so I try to do that a little bit in the winter. Avoid or limit outdoor activities when the temperature is near or dips below 5 degrees Fahrenheit. And take frequent breaks indoors from the cold. So, so hopefully everybody's heeding the warnings that, for Burn Awareness Week, and make sure to follow the West Bend Fire Department Facebook page, as well as the Wisconsin State Fire Inspectors Association social media pages. So again, I'll have something up every day regarding Burn Awareness Week.
So speaking of social media, before we get into fire extinguishers, you want to talk about this latest idiotic social media challenge?
Oh, yeah. And I can't believe it because it got 4 million hits on TikTok. And on a good day, one of my safety messages on any of my social media outlets might get 3,000 or 4,000 hits. So safety messages are boring. Things that explode are exciting. So on TikTok, there was a video. Somebody took a cube from a plug of, like, let's say, an Apple product, plugged it about 3/4 of the way in, and dropped a penny over the electrical prongs, and there was an arc flash. I can't think of many things that are more dangerous than that. So parents, when you're out there and your children are on TikTok, make sure you're aware that these things are out there. And I don't know, I got on TikTok because of this, and I've been watching some of the videos, and it's like a train wreck. I just can't look away. And so I'm actually trying to figure out if there's a way to use TikTok to get safety messages out there. So I'm waiting. I still got to wait till next month because you can only change your username every 30 days. Oh. So I'm actually going to change it to KMG365 Fireman Kenny. And that way I can get my safety messages out there. Hopefully, once I change my TikTok, I'll get some followers and I can get the safety messages out there. And they're probably, again, not going to get 4 million hits. Because safety is boring, safety isn't sexy, it doesn't make the news. But hopefully parents, when you're out there, if you see your child with a Cube plug-in, do not let them put a penny behind there. Or the other one that I saw the other day, they're plugging it in and then putting a flash drive in the receptor. So that blows up the flash drive. So I'm like, okay. So people, again, these ideas are out there. Don't do them. They are dangerous. You can get killed or worse.
Burn your house down.
You can burn your house down. I can guarantee your insurance company would be frowning upon that should someone burn the house down because they're doing the TikTok challenge.
Right. And well, the thing is, it wouldn't. I mean, it's become a thing now because it's the Cube, because it's easy to see and so on and so forth. But you could do the same thing with any electric plug.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But don't do it. Yeah.
But don't do it.
Yeah, don't do it.
But don't do it. But you right. could. But it's the right. only reason it's new now is because it's the Cube and it's on social media and people are paying attention to it. But right. it just seems kind of, you know.
Yeah. Well, social media has its place, and I've gotten a lot of great messages out and people are following some of the things. But those challenges out there are, you know, they're people are always doing something to make the latest and greatest, and they want to get as many hits as they can. And rather than follow safety messages, they're going to do something that's exciting and wild and crazy. And please stop doing that.
Wild and crazy and dangerous.
Wild, crazy, and dangerous. Exactly.
So, all right.
So moving on to fire extinguishers. So again, try to talk about some of the things we look for. It's been a couple of years since we've talked about fire extinguishers on WIBD. Thought it might be a good idea to revisit the topic so the listeners know what our firefighter paramedics are looking for when they are conducting fire inspections in local businesses and apartment buildings. All right, so there's five classes of fire extinguishers. Class A are ordinary combustibles, so your woods and your papers. Class B are your flammable liquids, such as your oils and fuels. C is energized electrical equipment, so it could be a Class A or Class B fire just plugged into and energized with electricity. Class D is your combustible metals, such as your magnesium and other alloy metals. And your Class K, which is cooking oils in restaurants and kitchens.
So a typical apartment should have which?
Usually an ABC extinguisher. So
because there are some that are combination.
Yeah. So the ABC extinguisher is a combination one. Usually those are dry chemical. They should be about a 5-pound extinguisher. Let's say some of your requirements for these extinguishers. So your installation height, the top of the extinguisher should not be more than 5 feet off the floor. The bottom of the extinguisher, not less than 4 inches off the floor. Inspection frequency. So fire extinguishers are required to have an annual inspection by a certified fire extinguisher company. Remember that certification comes from the manufacturer. So a lot of the extinguisher companies out there will have their technicians certified by each individual manufacturer so they know the ins and outs of the fire extinguishers. And then monthly checks. So somebody who is either in charge of the business or the apartment building should be checking those extinguishers monthly, making sure that the pressure is in the right range, making sure that there's nothing wrong with the canister, nothing wrong with the hose. And then on the back of the tag, there's actually a date and initials thing where you can put the date you checked it and the initials of whoever checked that fire extinguisher. For hydrostatic testing, for wet agents and carbon dioxide extinguishers, it's every 5 years. And for dry chemical, it's 12. So the 5-pound extinguisher that you should have, a minimum of 5 pounds, it should say 2A, 10B, and C. So the 2A is how much of the Class A materials it's going to put out. The 10B is how much of the flammable liquids it's going to put out. And then the C is that it's energized electrical equipment. So again, a 5-pound is minimum. The spacing should be no more than a 75-foot travel distance to the extinguisher from any point of the building. So like, let's say you might have extinguishers on the first floor of your condo or apartment building, but if they're from the farthest reaches of the apartment building, if it's more than 75 feet to get to those ones downstairs, you really should have one upstairs. And then as far as disposal and recycling, because a lot of people buy the disposable ones for their businesses, which is fine. But again, those should be replaced every year. The copy of the receipt should be taped to the extinguisher so that we know it's a new extinguisher. And then to get rid of your old ones, American Metal and Paper, 935 Shainar Drive, 262-334-9542. We'll take those old extinguishers. And thanks to Dennis Fechter, he's a Boltonville firefighter and manager at American Medical and Metal and Paper. He will take those extinguishers and dispose them for you, even if they're full.
Let me ask you this. When are you required to have a fire extinguisher in a property?
So any commercial or multifamily residential building is required to have a fire extinguisher. And again, that 75-foot travel distance applies, except for if there are flammable liquids in the building, so such as a shop or something like that, then the distances go down to 30 or 50 feet depending on the size of the extinguisher. So every industrial, commercial, and multifamily residential is required. And there's, I believe, in the Uniform Dwelling Code that there are some requirements for one and two family residential homes, but again, not enforceable by us because we don't inspect one and two family homes.
Right.
But even if it's not, you should have at least one fire extinguisher in your house. You should have, if you're going to go with the disposable ones, there are ones for sale, like at Menards, Home Depot, wherever, that will have a two pack, one that has a class ABC and one that has a class K for cooking. So the class K for cooking, make sure you have in your kitchen.
That doesn't help you in the garage.
It doesn't help you in the garage that much. So you should actually have the ABC in the garage or, somewhere that you know where the fire extinguisher is. Your family members know where the fire extinguishers are. And, every big fire starts out small. So you want to make sure to get it before it grows to be too big.
All right. Well, let's talk about, we have a guest coming in next Tuesday morning.
We do. So Fraidert Chest Pain Coordinator Tiffany Voss, she's a nurse with Fraidert, will be on WIBD on Tuesday, February 11th at 8 a.m. to talk about American Heart Month. So it just so happens she's talking about American Heart Month during National Cardiovascular Professionals Week, which is February 10th to the 16th. Again, so that's we have a number of great speakers and guests from Fraidert who've come on and helped out and given some really great tips and points. So looking forward to seeing hearing Tiffany next week on WIBD. For February, National Wear Red Day is February 7th. National Wear Red Day is observed annually on the first Friday in February. Heart disease and stroke kill 1 in 3 women. These diseases are 80% preventable, according to Go Red for Women's official website. Go to www.goredforwomen.org for more information. National Love Your Pet Day is February 20th. So, of course, for those of you who know that I'm the sheriff of the dog park, so Zoe will probably get some gift. Actually, her adoptiversary is coming up, too. That's going to be March 9th. So we'll have to talk about the adoption of pets at some point, even though that strays away from fire prevention. But it's personal for me, so why not?
See, there we go.
It's my show, so I'm just going to do it.
There you go. Yeah. So, all right.
And so for March, daylight savings time is Sunday, March 8th. Remember to change the batteries in your smoke alarms and carbon monoxide detectors when you change your clocks. National Inhalants and Poisons Awareness Week is March 15th to the 21st, and March is also Brain Injury Awareness Month. So we'll probably talk about that as well next month.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for having me on again, Rick. Hopefully everybody gets something out of the show. And again, remember to visit the West Bend Fire Department Facebook page for more information on everything that I'm talking about.
Community conversation this morning with Fireman Kenny, Captain Kenny Aslin from the West Bend Fire Department. We'll check news, and then we have our West Bend Area Chamber of Commerce local business spotlight this morning. 101.3 WIBD, AM 1470.